You're listening to Federal Prison Authority Presents Around the Block with Bruce Cameron and Susan Giddings, only on LA Talk Radio.
Can you hear me now?
There you go.
I'm back. Well, I tell you, the mic has a mind of its own. Well, good afternoon, everybody. Welcome to another episode of Around the Block, hosted by Federal Prison Authority. I'm Bruce Cameron, along with Susan Giddings. And it was a quiet week this week, folks. We, you know, just routine calls and questions and those things. So nothing major came out from Washington, D.C., so that's always good that there's no pants on fire moment out there that everybody's in a tizzy over and this and that and the other. Oh, before we go into the show topic today, which everybody's going to want to hear, what's all this about November and the sentencing guidelines? What is that?
So just routinely, right. The sentencing guideline, you know, the Sentencing Commission puts out recommendations.
Yes.
And they do it out for public comment, and then they finalize their recommendations, and they publish them. And they, Congress has, in this case, to November, whatever the date was, to
object,
vote against them. And if they don't, then they become the effective new guidelines. So a lot of things people think of them as new laws, and they're really not laws. They're specifically relevant to the guidelines and providing guidance to federal judges in terms of sentencing. So
the first question is going to be, hey, are they going to change anything for 924C? My guess is the answer to that is no.
And even if they did... It has no relevance
right.
to anything the Bureau is doing. Sentencing guideline changes only impact the sentencing guidelines and sentencing in court itself. Now, if there are some retroactive changes that may require an individual to go back to court, that's always possible. If you flash back to our Carswell days, way back, it used to be when someone was busted with marijuana plants, if you had five little seedlings sitting in a pot on the porch, right? And they were all, you know, 4 or 5 inches tall, you were held to the full weight as if it is
a farm.
A finished plant, right? Also, when we were in Carswell, the guidelines regarding precursor chemicals and right. precursor chemicals were treated as a finished weight. And of course, the weight in terms of the amount of drugs impacts how much time someone's looking at. So just over the course of time, the guidelines, the Sentencing Commission makes those adjustments. Sometimes they're retroactive. Sometimes they're not. Sometimes they're just from here forward. Sometimes they go back. And something that was initially not made retroactive, they then go back later and make retroactive. So staying on top of the changes in terms of what's retroactive and what isn't for folks that are in
right.
prison
right.
could present an opportunity to reduce their sentence.
Right.
But in terms of the Bureau, nothing, it makes a difference because it has nothing to do with the laws. It has to do with the guidelines the judges use.
All right. So there are some posts on the Facebook page about that. And oh, boy, everybody was following, and
mm-hmm.
you know, drug cases. There'll be probably more movement with drug cases
yeah.
than firearms cases. People asking about 922G or 922 sentences. I guess we'll just have to see.
Yeah.
What all transpires there. So
right. The biggest impact is the opportunity to reduce your current sentence.
Yeah.
To go
exactly.
back to the court and get some time knocked off.
Yeah,
the last big change they had with the guidelines had to do with...
The 821? Was it that?
Yeah, the 821 amendment. And the impact for many people was small in terms of sentences, 3 to 4 months. But one of the big changes, and it was happening while I was still working, was if they changed... the criminal history points. And yeah, it was only one or two points, but if you're that person sitting right on the cusp.
On the line? Woo! That's a big deal.
Like, 1 point, mm-hmm. one criminal history point, because unlike some of the other things in pattern and custom classification, criminal history points are stagnant, or static. Whatever they are at the point of sentencing, you carry them for the rest of your life in the Bureau. So, yeah, so that was a thing, and there was a lot of drama over that, because the courts didn't necessarily reissue a judgment, because somebody might not, they might have had that 1 point, but that 1 point might not have been enough to change their sentence.
Right.
But it certainly had an impact in the Bureau. And of course, the Bureau's position was, we don't calculate sentencing guidelines. We don't calculate points. If the probation provides something, if court provides something, we're absolutely going to adhere to it, but we don't calculate.
Well, now, and so, so it brings us to our show today. I can hear myself echo, you're right. Anyway, I need to, we've talked about the disciplinary process. We talked about, we talked about pattern risk, I think. We've talked about some other things, but we have, we've never really talked about some of the more fundamentals of case management.
It's sentence computation. And we get questions. We had a question this morning. We periodically get questions about things related to concurrent and consecutive sentences, to jail credit issues. And so I think it's one of those topics that doesn't get a lot of coverage, even in the Bureau, in terms of it's not talked about in admission and orientation. And again, if you've got a sentence and you were prosecuted, you had no priors, you had no jail credit, you voluntarily surrendered, had your sentence pre-FSA, had a good conduct time date, and you were done. It was all pretty straightforward. And what was on the sentence comp, it was important, but it was still very straightforward. I spent 11 years working in a penitentiary, and I can't tell you how many times standing at mainline at the noon meal, folks coming up to me with their sentence computation and saying, well, my date's not right, and I was here. And so we'd go through it line by line. So I thought that's what we could talk a little bit about today.
Okay.
So the sentence computation is broke up into sections. Everybody kind of, and we see it all the time, they'll do a kind of a snapshot of the top band that shows.
Now, is this in the blue book that I can follow?
Some of this is in the blue book.
Boy.
We don't do a right in the front. We do talk about the difference between consecutive and concurrent and commitment date versus date comp began and things like that. So yes, we do some of this, not to the depth that we're going to talk about today, actually, but it's a good starter. The book's a great starter.
All right.
So we see a lot of people will post snapshots to the Facebook page of this top band. And in that top band is the statutory date, the statutory date, time credits, and the satisfaction date. And they'll be like, well, where's my home confinement credit? And, or my home confinement days. And actually right above that section is a line that says home confinement eligibility date, right? Home detention eligibility date. So let's just talk about those four things right there. The time credits that appear on the sentence computation are only the time credits that are applied to the release. The statutory date is what you start with. What is your sentence? What's your good conduct time? What was your jail credit? What do you have? What's the release date, right? When we talk about advancing the satisfaction date, what we're talking about is those time credits. This is your statutory release date, but you're getting to satisfy it early, whether it's a few days, 60 days, or 365 days, right? It is advancing. It's not changing your statutory sentence. Your sentence is the same. What it's changing is that satisfaction date. And that's important to remember. When we talk about that home detention eligibility date that is on the sentence comp, This is not the same date that will appear on the time credit worksheet. This date is the number of home confinement days, which is 10% of the sentence, or 180 days, whichever's less. Thank you.
You're welcome.
And got a little tickle there. And it's applied to that satisfaction date. So each month that the satisfaction date changes because time credits were added, so does that home detention eligibility date. The new thing, and we talked about it show before last, is this new maximum home confinement that they're looking at those conditional dates and those unearned credits. None of that appears on the sentence computation because it's not part of the sentence computation. So that's kind of that first point. After that first section, you move into just some basic court information. What was your case number? What was your court, sentencing court? Some dates, but one of the things in there, your docket number, your judge, that kind of stuff. But one of the dates in there is date committed. The date committed is the date that you show up at your first designated institution, whether that's when you voluntarily surrendered, whether that is when the marshals dropped you off on the bus run. It is not any of that marshal time. It is just the date that you've been committed to the Bureau.
Okay.
Which, when we get to page two, when we talk about the date computation began, it can be the same date and it can be two different dates.
Okay.
When we move through the rest of this, we get information regarding any fines, restitutions, and assessments. Those are just entered when DSCC is building the sentence computation. Those are manually entered. So if someone's looking at it and they go, I only have $100 felony assessment, why does it say $1,000? That was an errant pinky finger on a zero. don't often see an error there.
20 count.
But anyway. It can happen. So yeah. I always recommend people review their sentence computation. And we actually had, this was before I joined you, actually had a case while I was still working. Individual wasn't getting his time credits. Looking at it, he's got all of his needs entered. He's got his pattern. He's got everything entered. I'm like, what is going on? And I went through everything and I was just kind of beating my head against the wall. So I reach out to the coding folks and they have the ability to run one individual through the auto calculator. And when it gets thrown out, he can see where it got thrown out. And he said, oh, it's the date comp began. I'm like, he's here. And he goes, no, they entered it wrong. In this particular case, the individual got sentenced, or his date comp began when he was sentenced, was at the end of the year. And of course, by the time he gets to the Bureau and they're entering the stuff, it's the new year. So instead of reading like December 23rd of 2023, it read December 23rd of 2024. And it was only like January of.
Were you in central office or are you working at a joint?
That was when I was at central office.
Okay.
So yeah. So, and it was kind of funny because I never even thought to look at a sentence computation and the reason is when sentence computations are done, they are done by one person. They are then audited by a second person. But things happen. Errors happen. That's why it's so important to review the information. Now, the upside of the sentence computation calculations is if the dates are correct, if your sentence is correct, I would tell people, well, look at the jail credit. Were you in jail before this date? Well, no. Okay. Is the number of months right? Yes. Is this when you went to court? As long as the component pieces are correct, then the calculation is correct. Because staff aren't mathing, the computer is mathing, which is a blessing.
Exactly.
Is a blessing. So as we move through it, when you kind of go to the next section, that's where you get into all of those dates and jail credit and good conduct time and all those kind of things. And again, you want to look at that date comp began, because that's the date that either you were sentenced on if you were remanded to custody, or it was the day that you showed up in the Bureau, those voluntary surrender folks. That's when you start getting to count days toward your sentence. Now everyone goes like, what about the jail credit? Jail credit is awarded as jail credit. It is not technically awarded as part of your sentence because you can't get official credit for your sentence before you're sentenced because you weren't sentenced. It's just, that's when your sentence begins, when the judge hits the gavel, right? But jail credit is also important. We have a case right now. The individual involved, the loved one, had a whole bunch of back and forth between federal and state, and the family thought that he should have had a lot more credit, and it wasn't. And we'll talk about some of those rules when we get into things like concurrent and consecutive and primary jurisdiction and things like that. But as you go through the rest of the thing, the next big thing is that jail credit line. And it's going to give you the date, the start date and the stop date. And then it's going to give you that total number of days. And again, the number of days is totally based on the count on the computer. Nobody is counting that. And then as you move down, there's just some other information, but you will see things like expiration with full term. What is that? If you had a 60-month sentence and you got in a whole lot of trouble and lost all of your good conduct time, all 15%, and you are doing a flat 60 months, that is your full-term expiration date. Your statutory release date backs off of that, and then your time credits backs off to the satisfaction date. Before we jump to some of those other terms, I wanted to talk real quickly about the RDAP guys because they've got some extra entries on their sentence comms.
Boy, that's for sure. Yep.
So they have on that last page that we talked about with all of those dates, they are also going to have a line for completion of resident program and completion of community program. And what happens when someone walks in the door and they go down to psychology and they're eligible and they do all the paperwork and paperwork goes out to DSCC and they say, yes, you're eligible for the time off. In order to calculate the conditional 3621E date, and this is true with FSA, but we're just talking just pure 3621E date, the DTS, the drug treatment specialist, is going to let DSCC know about what date are you going to expect to complete. We expect this cohort to complete April 15th of next year. They're starting now. That's when they're going to complete, April 15th. Every individual within that cohort, the amount of time off will be based on completes on April 15th, and goes to halfway house the next day, does 120 days. They don't necessarily go to halfway house the next day, but for planning purposes, completes the program, 120 days of halfway house, and then they can determine what the earliest release date is. Because again, if you're eligible for 3621, need time off.
Right.
And after the 4 months halfway house, you only have 9 months left. 9 months is your amount of time off. It is up to the 12 months. And that is that kind of, again, the computer's doing the math, but people are entering in that date information. So what you're going to see on someone is that, what's that tentative complete date? What are we expecting this person to complete? If the person got in trouble while in RDAP, didn't get kicked out, but got put back, the DTS is going to submit new paperwork to DSCC, and it's going to modify that date.
Well, is it going to be the DTS or the case manager?
On the 761, on the completion date for the program, that's DTS. That is the drug treatment folks. Now, the unit team has a different role. And you and I have talked about this, and we've had a couple of clients who kind of ran into this hiccup. And that is after the person completes the drug treatment program. And remember, when they submit the first form, they give them like the expected date of completion. But once they complete and the unit team is requested halfway house, and now we know the exact date that they did complete it, and we know the date of the halfway house, there's a new form that's done, and that's called the 628. The 628 goes to DSCC. This one is completed by unit team. There's only three pieces of information that go into it. When did you complete RDAP in the institution? When are you transferring to halfway house? And how many days in halfway house will you get? Now, one of the things we're seeing, because this is to this day still a manual process, if the case manager submits that 628 and uses the number of days between the designation date and the current release date, that will lock that date in. And even though their time credits are accumulating and they'll appear on the worksheet, they're not getting applied to release because that 628 process, which is like 40 years old now, 35 years old, something like that,
doesn't factor in.
It doesn't consider FSA. And that 628 was a stopgap measure to make sure that an individual was inadvertently released early from halfway house without having completed that minimum 120 days. So we just had a call, email over. Oh, we had a call. It was right at the end of last week. One of our folks transferred into halfway house, and he's just distressed because his date hasn't changed since May, and his unit team couldn't tell him why. So he's like reaching out to us, what's going on? That wasn't shared with us, so we're like, hang on, took a look. Sure enough, we've already sent out a request to get that fixed, but it locks it in. Now, if the case manager calculates the number of days in halfway house between the date of transfer and the conditional release date, right, as opposed to the current release date, it locks in what date? It locks in the conditional date. And again, the worksheet will continue to tick up days, but they've locked in the conditional date. And it's a workaround because it's still a manual process. It has not been automated.
But won't that date, that's the combination of the RDAP satisfaction as well as the First Step Act credits, will that be automatically factored in?
Well, yes and no. So when the conditional release date is calculated, it will take into account the 3621E RDAP, the earned time credits, and the unearned time credits.
I mean, because there's got to be a way out that this won't be a hand process. I mean, there's got to be a fix for that, right?
I asked that question, and people were looking at it, and people are continuing to look at it. The problem is, it is not an FSA issue. It is a sentence comp issue. And changes to the sentence comp are made very, very carefully because it's a sentence computation. It is the document. Like I said, the manual workaround is the case manager submitting the 628 for the conditional release date. That is not something that is being done across the board. We've seen a few cases, but it's actually not being done. In fact, we've had some conversation with some of our liaisons to say, hey, this is where this is where it's happening. What's happening right now is there is a person in DC, right, who literally is monitoring every single RDAP person in the community. And when the appropriate time comes, and they're manually tracking spreadsheet.
Wow.
And when that date happens, or gets ready, is approaching, they have to submit a new 628. In a perfect world, And it was kind of funny because I'm not a computer person, right? I'm a case manager at heart. And I would come up with ideas and I'd share them with the computer people. And I would think it was like super easy, like, hey, all we need to do is X. And then they would look at me like I had lost my ever-loving mind because apparently I suggested something that would take gobs and gobs and gobs of code. It really wasn't that simple. What would have to happen is instead of just depending on the 628, it would have to, because like I said, the current 628 only includes three pieces of data. And the one that's causing the issue is how many days are you in halfway house? It would have to configure take the 628 information into the sensory sentence computation module and say, okay, he hasn't earned 365, but he also hasn't completed 120 days.
I was gonna say,
and once he hits 120 days, he can keep, you know, he can keep earning time credit toward his release date until either he hits 365 days or he bumps up against that 120 day brick wall. That's what has to happen. And that is not an easy thing to do because it literally is tied into the Bureau's main system where time credits and the calculation is doing this calculation externally and then importing the information into the sentence comp. And that's why it only changes the satisfaction date and not the statutory date.
Yeah.
Kind of a pain.
No, man, I know. As an RDAP guy, we do these the on month four, we'd want the treatment summary done and everything ready to make sure they had successfully passed their community treatment, right? And we'd route that up, and that'd be kind of a pseudo process to make sure they had satisfied.
Because the goal is there are a lot of times where someone's finishing RDAP on Friday and transferring on Monday to halfway house.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of coordination between the DTS folks and the unit team folks, because the unit team, there's lots of times the unit team is actually submitting the referral paperwork in advance of the completion, because the individual has been doing a good job. He's been moving along appropriately. There's no reason to think he's going to lose his ever-loving mind and start screwing up now, right, when he's just 2 months out. So the case manager does the referral in anticipation that he's going to graduate on time as projected, gets the date, and then they have, again, a few weeks, they'll turn around and do that 628 after the designation, send it out to DSCC. Back in the day, it was done locally at the institution when we had sentences comps being done in the institution.
Just get ISM, get it done, man.
Get it done. So now we have to send them out to DSCC. Yep. So.
Yep.
So let's talk about some terms. And we get this a lot. In fact, this morning, one of the calls we had was an individual finishing up some state time and going to be going to federal and wanted to know about getting all of her time because it was concurrent. It was supposed to be concurrent. So let's talk about what is concurrent. A concurrent means two different sentences are running at the same time. They're running together. They're not necessarily starting and stopping together. That would be coterminous. Rarely see that. Back in the day, you used to see that, but not anymore.
No.
But concurrent means they're running at the same time. They're both being allowed, whether you're sitting in the state or sitting in the feds, you're getting credit for that day in two different locations. That's what it means to be running concurrent. A lot of times in the federal stuff, you'll see somebody who has two different charges and we'll get 24 months on each run running concurrently. That means the de facto sentence is only 24 months. When you see somebody that's having a sentence that's running consecutive, that means they're running end to end. The first one has to finish before the second one can start. And kind of a hybrid of the concurrent, you'll hear people refer to a concurrent overlapping sentence. So I was sentenced here and I was sentenced here and the federal judge ran my sentence concurrent with the state judge, but my state time started back wherever and my sentence with the feds started at a later point. So yep. I'm serving the one, then I'm serving two. My federal, my state sentence ends earlier, and then I continue to serve the federal. And so you picture that kind of overlap that's happening.
Right.
So that's it's really important. But the question we had this morning was, we asked the question, did the federal judge run it concurrent? Because from the Bureau standpoint, they don't care what the state judge did.
Right.
At all. It has to, and if a judgment doesn't say specifically right. that it's concurrent, the presumption is it is consecutive. And it right. will be computated as being consecutive, which means until you finish that state sentence, nothing else happens. Mm-hmm. We're looking at a case right now where, again, the family contacted us and was back and forth with federal and state, thought he should have a whole lot more jail credit. But what we did find when we reviewed all of the state paperwork was the state released him on one day and the marshals didn't pick him up for like 12 days later. Right now, his sentence is being calculated based on that marshal pickup date.
Right.
But the only reason he was being held by the state after his release date was the marshal detainer. Now, it's very possible what the Bureau got was the marshal, what's called the Marshal 129.
Right.
It's a form that we get from the Bureau, gets from the marshals, and it has all the in and out movement. And if the marshals keyed in the wrong date, if they keyed in the pickup date and not the date that his sentence ended.
Right.
Garbage in, garbage out.
He doesn't get the credit.
Right. So we've provided the institution some documents. The family also sent in documents to their family member. And, you know, he went over to records. We're waiting for the outcome of that. But again, paying attention to the documentation, you know, right now we've got state paperwork that says one thing. And essentially, there's marshal paperwork that says something else. Now the Bureau needs to look into that and investigate and figure it right. out and confirm with the state. They need to reach out to the state.
So he was good on his marshal pickup date, right? Or we don't know.
His marshal pickup date reflected his marshal pickup date. The state actually paroled him. Right. Yeah. The state actually paroled him 12 days earlier.
Right, right, right.
Okay. But they didn't release him because of the federal detainer.
Right, right.
So he's entitled to that time.
Right.
So that's a case. And again, paying attention to what is on the sentence computation of jail credit. And again, going back to when I would be standing main line at the pen and I'd be like, were you in jail for any other reason before this date?
Right.
You know, and then it's okay if you were okay, why were you there? You know, did you get picked up on the state? A lot of folks get confused mm-hmm. and they're like, well, the feds lodged the detainer. Means nothing.
Right.
Your primary that. Jurisdiction mm-hmm. is with the state, which at is our next big term that's really important to understand is primary jurisdiction. Primary jurisdiction is not who physically has the body. It's who legally has the body. So I would always use the example of being in federal custody and going out on a state writ, right? The Bureau lets the state pick you up, go out to handle some charges, right? But your federal sentence keeps running. Why? Because you're still federal. Your primary jurisdiction is still federal. Just because the state borrowed you doesn't somehow make you a state inmate. The reverse is true. If you are in state custody and the feds writ you out and then return you, because writs are returned around trip mm-hmm. tickets, you continue to be a state in state legal jurisdiction. Right. They were the primary holder. It doesn't matter if you were writted out and were out for 6 months or a year before you go back. You have to go back. I had there were at least two or three occasions where right. we had someone who showed up who was with the state, writted out on feds, prosecuted, got a sentence, and the marshals, instead of returning them,
just left them.
Brought them to the Bureau.
Oh, they did to a joint
into our custody, right? And so, of course, then you know some records office person is looking at it, going, "Well, this doesn't look right," and goes over to the supervisor, and they double check it, and sure enough, we've got a jurisdiction problem. And in those cases, that individual is immediately, and in each case, that individual was immediately pulled off the yard, placed in special housing. And we were contacting whatever state he belonged to say, come get your guy. And none of that time that you spent in the feds
counted.
None of it. Because you were not a federal and in federal jurisdiction. Under federal jurisdiction, you were under state. And that's really frustrating. I had a case years ago that literally sat in federal custody for 9-10 months when it was caught, and going through, and there was some paperwork that didn't look right, and they were having, this was back pre-DSCC, and they, you know, the local office sent it up to the region and regional council to look at, and sure enough, and it was off the yard as soon as everybody agrees this isn't a federal person. Off the yard.
You gotta go.
Got to go. Now, we did have some cases, and in one particular case, the state just dismissed the charges. They dropped the charges and said, oh, never mind, you can keep them. So in that case, he was okay. We put him back on the yard. He was getting his credit. He was fine. But that was because the state released their jurisdiction.
All right.
So.
Do we still have state borders?
We do. We have folks that, for whatever reason, the state did not feel like they could safely house them.
Right.
And they ship them off to us, because the reality is it doesn't matter how big a state system is. I don't care if it's Texas or California. Sometimes those systems still aren't big enough, depending on what the circumstances are. and you get them and they get housed in the federal system.
Right.
And then there are times where we have federal individuals who get what's called a nunk-pro-tunk. No, that's a lie. They are a state concurrency case. That would be someone who was serving state time and was writted out to the feds, got a federal sentence, went back, but the federal judge said, go ahead, run his case concurrently. And so now they're sitting somewhere in a state and their federal time is starting.
Right.
Those individuals are actually monitored by the regional offices. So depending on what state, so if you're sitting with Tennessee Department of Corrections with a what's called a state concurrency case, Mid-Atlantic Regional Office in Maryland is monitoring. And if you finish your federal sentence early, then the Mid-Atlantic region does the official notifications and then tells the marshals to withdraw the detainer. If you finish the state sentence early, the marshals pick you up and bring you into the feds. So state concurrency are federal inmates sitting in state custody. State borders are state inmates sitting in federal custody. Yeah.
I saw those at Butner 1 a lot. We didn't see that at Carswell, or I didn't see it in my part of Louisiana, but. Anyway,
yeah, we had a couple of cars. Well, but you would have seen them. You would have had less interaction with them than as a case manager. We would have seen it
for sure. 100%.
So because they didn't qualify for, like, obviously stuff halfway
stuff
house.
Stuff I was doing. Yeah.
Stuff you were doing. Yeah, yeah. They didn't qualify.
I hear you.
So, but those are some of the high points. One other thing, and it's kind of a detail, but I like to share it, because if you're having to file administrative remedy, as we talk about, we talk about the importance of citing policy. When it comes to jail credit, there are actually two different types of jail credit. There's B1 and B2 credit. And how do they get their name? Because that's what they are in the regs. It's subparagraph B1, subparagraph B2. And it has to do with the type of jail credit. Now, does it make a difference in terms of the sentence? No, it's still jail credit. But if you're looking to file administrative remedy, citing the correct credit, the correct type of credit, just gives credibility to
your claim.
your claim. Like, you know, we talk about it in the Unlocking Time Credits book with FSA. Don't just say, hey, I'm eligible. You did it wrong. Cite policy. Be specific. Right. Same thing. So B1 credit is credit that's directly related to the offense that you've been convicted for. So you get busted and for whatever, and they put you in MCC Chicago as a pretrial inmate. That's B1 credit. You're in there for federal charges pending prosecution. B2 credit is a little different. B2 credit is that credit that for things that happened after your initial date, but they aren't credited to anywhere else. So picture that you have your federal stuff going on, you got state stuff going on, and the state drops the charges in lieu of federal prosecution. They drop their charges. That credit, you can get credit for. So you were out on federal bond and you got in trouble with the state. You got busted with the state. Well, you were on bond, so you had nobody's credit. So you, now you're with the state. Okay, state has primary jurisdiction. They can prosecute you, and if they convict you, that credit goes to the state. Right. But if the state drops the charges because they know you're looking at more time with the feds, and they'll let the feds take the pound of flesh, they're not interested, so they don't want it on their dime, so they drop the charges. Those days that you were sitting in that county jail on those state charges that never happened, you can get credit for them. You can get jail credit. And that's the B2 credit. It's jail credit, not directly related to your offense, what you were picked up for, but the charges weren't applied. Nice. The days weren't applied anywhere else. The big thing is you can't double dip on credit unless the judge ordered your term run concurrent, and then it's not.
The judge is silent. It's
and the judge is silent. Right.
Or consecutive, yeah.
Right. And then there's this, and we're not going to get into it today, but there's this other process called a nunc-pro-tunc designation where, and this gets into Willis and CAPUS credit, and it's way too complicated for this conversation, but it is an opportunity to get credit, a little bit more credit toward your sentence. Nunc-pro-tunc means this for that, right? We're going to treat this as your date as opposed to this. And it gives you an earlier designation. So we will see that for cases where an individual, maybe they came from the state, they were serving a state sentence, they were convicted for the feds, they finished up their state, now they're with us, and they're like, oh, but my federal judge said he was gonna run it concurrent. And it's not on the jail credit, but they've got their sentencing transcripts. And it says it right there. You can go through this process of a nunc-pro-tunc designation. So even though your judgment didn't say anything, we'll go and go, oh, okay. And there's a process to go through. And then they will give you credit back to your sentencing date.
But the DSCC verifies all that.
DSCC does all of that. But if you're sitting, if you're that person, again, you've just gotten to the federal prison, you're looking at your judgment and commitment order, and it shows that your sentence just started last week when you showed up off the bus.
I've been down for months over here at such and such county.
Years. Yeah. Yeah. Right. That's for where
sure. 100%.
That's where you got to be paying attention. Yeah. You got to be your own advocate. We talk about that all the time, about the importance of advocating for yourself. And that's about getting educated. And for our folks that are already in prison, that's their families. Their families are working with them. And that's why we've done the books we've done, and we do this podcast is getting people educated. So they can fight their own fight.
By policy.
And we help out when they need us.
Yeah, referencing the right stuff and having a rationale. Mm-hmm. And good stuff. All right. We got 5 minutes and change, so.
All right. Anything else we should cover on that? We're pushing the envelope, and I'm like, oh my gosh, I forgot something.
No.
I think it's always just important. And one more thing I will say. So sentence computations are not releasable documents, but the public information screen is releasable, and the public information screen has almost all of the same information. It's going to have jail credit. It's going to have date committed. It's going to have sentence begin. It's going to have a lot of that information. So a lot of times what you'll see case managers do is they will print the public information screen. But if somebody is requesting information, that is it. So they will not receive something that's labeled sentence computation monitoring. They're going to receive that public information screen. But it does have
a lot of the shared information.
Almost 100% of the same information. No,
that's
so
good.
It's we just had somebody actually on the NACDL listserv ask the question, can I get a sentence computation?
Yes.
And
if it really get your release, right?
Yep. So
and get it.
All righty.
No, that's good stuff. So I know, and folks, you probably have to watch this show 2 or 3 times, right? I know
there was a lot of information.
It's just a lot of technical stuff. We know that, you know. And
and they don't have cards like flashcards.
Yeah, you know. So, and that's what we're here for. Join the Facebook group. First Step Act early release from federal prison. Go to our YouTube channel, First Step Act. Go to our website, federalprisonauthority.com, right? Ask us questions, give us a call, send us a text, and we'll get back with you, you know, and we'll do everything we can to answer your question, because we know this stuff is convoluted and crazy, and if you're, you know, all, you know, we both do, but I certainly talk to family members all the time, particularly the wives, and they're just like, I don't, just all this nomenclature and jargon, and they're just pulling their hair out, right? And I get it. I totally get it. It's like, well, let's sit down and let's see where we're at with this and what we can do for your loved one's situation. But certainly the book, and then the green book.
And then the green book.
Designation. Yeah, you know, will definitely help and give you a lot of power and knowledge. All right, then. Not only that, but you can listen to all our past episodes on the LA Talk Radio site. They're archived there. We're also on Apple Podcast. That's right, Apple Podcast. Just we're there. Show summary, the shows are there. Also on Amazon Audible. Yay, so that's good, too. So we're out there. This podcast is out there.
And please, if you have questions, if you're listening to the show today or you're watching it on a rewind and you're like, hey, wait a minute, I don't understand what you said about something, throw a question in the comment. We will get back with you. We do monitor the comments, but we'll also talk about it on the next show. We don't want people to be sitting there going.
Thing, I got to say this, our email is federalprisonauthority@gmail.com. Once again, all I want, federalprisonauthority@gmail.com. I think I had about like 40 or 50 requests that went to federalprisonauthority@google.com. It doesn't work. Your email, that Damon emailer guy, he sends me all these notifications of all these failed emails. federalprisonauthority@gmail.com. Remember, gmail.com. Don't put Google. All right, then. Well, it was a great show. We're glad that everybody came out. And so I'm sure we'll have another exciting show for you next week. We'll determine what we need to focus on or what, and give you another great show for next week. So until then, have a blessed week. Stay safe. We'll see you here next time on Around the Block. Take care, everybody.
Bye-bye.
See you.
You're listening to Federal Prison Authority Presents Around the Block with Bruce Cameron and Susan Giddings, only on LA Talk Radio.